by pretty much every material measurement, things are better today than they've ever been.
Oh, ever.
Yet, if you look at kind of metrics of emotional well-being, we're a total mess.
Hey, everybody. We're back. That's Mark Manson, author of several books. The newest one comes out tomorrow. Can I say that? Okay, cool. Naz just nodded at me because sometimes when you're doing something recorded, you don't want to date it, but it does come out tomorrow.
That's
this
a
is
bit
the
like,
trend or not.
That's a bit like you need me to give you approval.
Sometimes, I mean, you're the boss. You're the boss, and I just work here. Anyway, hi, everybody. Welcome to the show.
This is the Gender Not. I am Naz.
I'm Dan.
I feel really awkward about that dynamic. So you had a chat with Mark Manson a few weeks ago. He came around and you had like the massivest chat ever.
Yeah.
So we've got installment two today, where you talked about what, like the modern world, life, all of it.
Yeah, literally all of it. He was here for 16 hours.
No, but it was a really good chat, so we're going to hear that in a second. Super excited. Let's do some mega quick housekeeping. First of all, share this show if you're listening. Pass it on to two people.
If you're listening right now, and I know you are, because you heard me say that, share
this. Dan's going to bug you. He's going to come after you and be like,
yeah,
share this.
Go into your bathroom and turn off the light. And say my name three times.
What?
Remember Bloody Mary? Maybe you guys called it something different in England.
No.
Anyway, share the show.
Also, write to us. It's thegendernot@gmail.com. Write to us about anything, but especially write to us about dating, because we've been getting some really interesting emails where people are telling us about expectations when dating, like, you know, oh, I'm trying to be more open-minded, but I still expect guys to do X, or guys
right.
still expect me to do Y. So we're getting a lot of really interesting stuff from you guys. So I think we're going to do an episode on sort of our expectations when dating,
right.
and are we slipping into regressive gender roles, or, you
yeah.
know,
ooh,
being
murky.
Traditional.
Yeah, it's like it's 2019, and yet sometimes I'm still expected to do things like it's 1959.
Like what?
I don't know. Like,
give me one example.
Like, take her to a sock hop. No, no, but you never know. Am I supposed to pay for things? Do I open the door? Do you know what I mean? Or is me opening a door giving the message that I think you're weak?
Well, wait. If you open a door for a woman on a date, like, have you ever had anyone be offended at that?
I have.
Seriously?
Uh-huh.
Dude, maybe people in LA are, like, overly woke and, like, touchy or something.
I don't think it's happened here, but it has happened before, and I don't remember if it was when I was in Seattle or New York, but it has happened where, and I want to say it's been two different women have been like, I can open doors for myself, thank you.
Huh.
Which is fine, and they're not wrong. They can. I mean, I assume they have arms and hands. I don't know. Listen, I try not to make assumptions about people, but I did see them and they did have arms and hands.
But what about paying for people? Because I have no problem with people paying for me.
We can dive more into this when we do the episode. I have some stories about that as well.
But anyway, yeah, you had a chat with Mark. So he's got a book coming out tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Monday. So book out on the 14th May. Everything is Fucked, a book about hope. You guys talked about the modern world and pretty much everything about modern life. You covered it all, but it was interesting because the theme that kept coming up was choice and the problem of too much choice, which is something I think about a lot. So it was quite exciting that you guys talked about it. I just feel like too much choice really messes us up, and I'm a big fan of closing doors.
Yeah. Oh, man. Too many open doors? No thanks.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go with that.
Wait, but do you have anything to say on that or not?
I mean, yeah, I think too much choice is a terrible thing. Here's the thing. I am a true to form socialist, and I think we should all be given like one government issued everything. Like, we get one pair of pants, and everybody gets the same phone, not an iPhone. I don't like Apple, but Everybody gets the same backpack. Do you know what I mean? Like, we all get the same laptop. It's the same, and everything's fine, and nobody has to compete because competition is stupid.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, and what, your wife gets assigned to you? Do you have no choice?
Oh, fuck. Fingers crossed. I don't know. That, I mean, yeah, see, that's the other part, right? Like, how do we, I don't know. Your wife gets, yeah. I mean, that's worked for so many cultures for so many years.
Yeah, it, yeah.
What if it's not that your wife gets assigned to you? Like, let's take this out of the, you know, patriarchal role. And what if your husband gets assigned to you? Do
yeah,
you know
either
I mean?
Way. Either way. Either way.
Yeah, let's not make the woman the property. But
no, that's yeah. not my point. But I don't know. It is. I do just feel like we're in a time where, like, there's just so much choice. And you see it a lot in, actually, I see it a lot in this sort of online dating culture, which I find really bizarre.
Right, you refuse.
Well, I've never done any of that stuff. I just find it really bizarre. And it's like, you know, I don't know, it's like a menu of people. It's just really weird.
Which I bet they have at alien restaurants.
Yeah. But I don't know, I find it weird. I don't know, I feel like there is a lot to kind of just sticking to fewer things and getting to know them better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I have a very basic wardrobe.
Dude, you sound like Steve Jobs or like one of these really pretentious people who was like, I'm spending so much time thinking, I can't think about my clothing. And it'd be like, oh God, that's so pretentious.
Oh, well, first of all, don't ever compare me to Steve Jobs. He's a monster. And I'm glad he's dead. But I spent a lot of time thinking about what I'm going to wear. I had about 20 pairs of New Balances. Anyway, choices are bad. Mark Manson's good.
Buy the book.
Buy his book. Everything is fucked. You and I seem to have a very similar philosophy on life, which mine is I go to, you know, if somebody's like spinning out about something, I manage people for my day job. And I often go, the good news is none of this matters and we're all going to die.
That's awesome.
So who gives a shit about our stupid job?
Yeah, it's like in a week you're not even going to remember this happened.
Right, and that seems like kind of what you're going... I just from what I've seen of the new book, I haven't read it itself yet, but is that kind of a similar philosophy?
It's kind of a starting point. You know, the core theme of the book is hope.
And there's hope in my message.
Yeah, well, what's interesting about it is that I think it's... On the one hand, we all need some vision of hope. We need some vision of like how our life can be better or how the world can be better. But on the other hand, if we cling too tightly to that vision, we freak out all the time. And so it's hope is this weird kind of double-edged sword,
right?
That we have to be careful with. And I think one thing that happens today with, you know, I think all the echo chambers and everything that happens is that we get so caught up in our little vision of how the world should be that, you know, any tweet that contradicts it, we like lose our shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is everybody kind of loses sight of the big hope, right? I think, and they focus on the little hope.
Yes.
Of like the minutia of day-to-day activities.
Absolutely.
Which it kind of goes back to your other thing about like the what do we want to give a fuck about and what not.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Where are we choosing to find value in our life?
Totally.
Yeah.
And so is this kind of just a bigger take on that?
It's I would call it kind of like an extension of it. You know, Subtle Art, my last book, was very individual focused. You know, what are the things in your life that you are paying too much attention to or maybe valuing that you shouldn't be valuing? And this next book kind of broadens that out to more social, cultural issues, as well as like just kind of where a lot of the belief systems that we develop throughout the course of our lives due to our values, you know.
Okay. And does it basically explain how we got into this horrible situation?
Yeah, like my take on it. Basically.
I'm assuming you think we're in a horrible situation.
Well, no. Well, so
not a hopeless situation.
No, well, this is the interesting thing. This is one thing I talk about at the beginning of the book is that we live in a very paradoxical time right now in that by pretty much every material measurement, things are better today than they've ever been.
Oh, ever.
In world history. There's less violence. There's fewer wars. We're safer, healthier, living longer. We're curing diseases all the time. Yet, if you look at kind of metrics of emotional well-being, we're a total mess. People are freaking, like, depression, anxiety,
suicide,
Medicaid, pharmaceutical addiction, like all this stuff is just, it's taking off, and it's taking off in a lot of, all over the world kind of at the same time. And so it's this weird paradox of, like, if things are so good, why is everybody losing their shit?
Why are we all killing ourselves?
Yeah, like, why are we miserable? Yeah. And I think it's a fascinating question. And I think my take on it is that there's something about modern life that complicates our ability to form hope. It complicates our ability to create that vision of, like, a better future that gives us motivation and energy and value. And so the rest of the book kind of dives into that. It's like, how does that happen?
Yeah. So this show, you know, we talk a lot about gender, and I'd like to kind of, like, focus us down on that. Like,
sure.
So let's maybe pair that up. I mean, into the most obvious thing that I can think of, which is, like, relationships, right? Yeah. Like, if everything is so good in the world right now, like, we are a world of plenty, and everything is abundant and instant and wonderful, why is the divorce rate so high? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, why are so many people getting pregnant at 14? Like, why can't we figure out interpersonal relationships, especially as men and women?
I think one effect of the technology, and when I say technology, I don't just mean, you know, everybody likes to pick on social media, but I think it's more fundamental than that. I think it's the internet, it's media in general. I think it's phones, apps, everything.
As I'm, like, putting Tinder down
Have this conversation. I think the more our technology caters to our individual whims and desires, the more kind of fragmented and disconnected from each other we become emotionally. Relationships require sacrifice. Like, intimacy is a product of sacrifice. Intimacy is a product of being vulnerable, putting yourself out there, sticking up for the other person, you know,
giving up your cats.
Yeah, we were just joking. You have two cats running around right now. I love cats, but my wife's allergic, so I don't have cats anymore. But that's just, it's those types of things that ultimately build and develop that sense of commitment and meaning in our relationships. And so when we're developing a culture that is designed to satisfy every urge as soon as it occurs, we start to get bad at that sacrifice. We get bad at that ability to be vulnerable for somebody else.
Interesting. So we're too selfish.
I don't know if it's selfish.
Self-seeking.
Maybe self-centered, self-absorbed.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, our culture celebrates individuality. You know, everything that's built and used is built around individual desires and liberating people's individual desires. But there's like a glue that gets broken up, socially speaking.
Do you think that there was, like, a noticeable shift from the idea of, like, family values to, like, independence culture?
I think so. You
know, I feel like in the early 1900s, like, if you would ask somebody these questions, would they be like, well, it's all about a family, you know what I mean? A husband and a wife and their children and their dog. And nowadays it's like, I'll wait till I'm 40 to have kids.
Yes. So that's the family thing has eroded. And a lot of people on the right are very panic about that. And I think there's probably something to that. Like, I think there is a lot of psychological value that comes from having a stable family, two parents, you know, living in the same home and all that stuff. I think that but it goes beyond that. So, you know, churches, for instance, people are much less religious now than they used to be. Local communities. There's this great book by a guy named Robert Putnam called Bowling Alone. And he basically just shows this multi-decade trend of people are less active in their local communities. So the reason the book is called Bowling Alone is that the statistics show that more people bowl today than ever before, but there are fewer bowling leagues than ever before.
No kidding.
So everybody's bowling alone. And if you look around, everything from PTA groups to church groups to local community service to, you know, everything, it's this, you see the same thing. It's becoming more fragmented, and everybody still wants to do it, but they don't want to do it with other people. They want to do it themselves, their own way.
Yeah, I know people who just, and it's this weird evolution that I feel like has happened in the course of just my lifetime. People love going to the movies alone.
Alone, yeah.
That when I was a teenager, if you went to a movie alone, yeah, you were the biggest nerd.
Yeah, you were a loser.
Could you even imagine? No one wanted to go with you, yeah. Or you're watching something so bad that you have to see it alone.
Yeah.
And like now it's like people are like, I love going to the movies alone. It's like a safety blanket.
I mean, you used to go in groups of 12, 15 kids, you know, and it's like half of you didn't even want to watch the movie, but it's like what your friends were doing.
Right.
So you went too.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. Bowling alone. That's interesting.
So the other thing, you made a quip about Tinder earlier. I think Tinder is like a really interesting case in that, it creates paradox of choice. So, you know, if you imagine back in the day, let's say you lived in like some small town in America, you maybe knew like half a dozen potential partners that were suitable for you. And so you'd meet them and get to know them. And, you know, maybe three of them you didn't really like and three of them you kind of liked. And you'd see where, you know, if you started dating one and it started going well, it's like, all right, well, you know, found my husband or wife.
There's my best gal.
Yeah. And it's like, there was no doubt about it. There was like, well, these were my options. I found the one I really liked. I feel good about it. Whereas today, you have, especially if you live in a place like LA where we are now, like you have thousands and thousands and thousands of options.
I'd be hard pressed to walk three blocks without seeing half a dozen potential promising.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I almost gotten like three car accidents on the way here.
Yeah, Silver Lake's a rough neighborhood.
But it's you know, it's even if you're, I've talked to a number of people who've said that like even when you're on a date like that's going well, even when you like the person you're on the date with, you can't help but think, well, I might find something better, and well, you know, it's cool that he has this job, but I bet I can meet like somebody who's making a little more money. You know, it's this constant, what's the term I'm looking for? It's almost, there's like that term, like poverty of the riches. It's like too many options makes it so that you're never satisfied with what's in front of you.
Sure. Sure. I feel like I've been on a Tinder date and like checked Tinder while they were in the bathroom. And it was going fine.
Yeah, right.
But I got messages. You know
and
what
it,
I mean?
And it comes back to, it's like, you know, that intimacy that requires some degree of sacrifice or whatever. You know, why are you gonna sacrifice anything if you've got like seven other matches on your phone at any given time?
Right. Honestly, the sacrifice would be sticking to the one.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm talking about sacrifices.
Yeah, so it's a weird time. It's a very weird time. I feel like we're leaving behind. I mean, I think it's, and I think I talked about this last time I came on this show, which was that I think it's clear beyond a shadow of the doubt, but that those traditional social structures are gone and they're not coming back. But I don't think we know what. Like, we need to find a way to still meet our psychological needs for intimacy and affection and love in some sort of, like, sustainable and consistent way. And right now, we're not doing that. The things that have replaced those nuclear families and those local churches and stuff like that, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Tinder, they're not getting the job done.
Right. Well, there's no vulnerability on the other side of a screen.
Yeah.
Right? It takes sitting face to face with somebody, looking them in the eyes and having a hard conversation for that to come out. At least that's my experience.
Absolutely. I think what we have inadvertently done the past couple decades is we've replaced quality of connection with quantity of connection.
Mm.
And,
sure.
And while quantity is good, there's a lot of benefits that have come from social media and everything else. We need that quality to maintain not only just our well-being, but also have meaningful relationships in our lives.
Well, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, the end of my philosophy of nothing matters and we're all going to die is the only thing of any real significance is, you know, like making a positive change in someone else's life.
Yeah.
Right. And the only way we're going to do that is face to face.
Yeah.
At least that's my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends how you define positive change. I mean, you can definitely do...
Well, just acts of kindness, you know what I mean? Like, just being kind to another person is the only thing that, in my opinion, genuinely feels good inside.
Yes. I think it's that's the connection that we're kind of talking
right.
about.
Of like sex is great. It's cars are cool.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, like, doing just the smallest nice thing for another person is the only time where I go, hey, that actually... has a sustaining effect in me.
And there, that's the sacrifice.
Right.
That's where the sacrifice comes in. Because it's yeah, I mean, my whole profession is posting clever and witty advice on Twitter or whatever, and thousands of people see it and they love it, but it doesn't make my life any better. It's very similar to sex or a nice car or whatever. Like, you get a high, but there's no fulfillment. Whereas... you know, my relationships with my wife and close friends and family members, that's what feels like the most profound in my life at the end of the day.
But so, okay, if we're pulling more and more out of like group functioning as like people, right? Like we were talking about bowling alone and everything that we do is online and instant gratification, what is our motivation for getting out of this?
Well, so these two things are very much connected.
Right.
We've lost that sense of meaning from our local communities. Instead, we're spending all of our time online. And the way we find our meaning online in these massive platforms like Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, the way we find our meaning on these platforms is by jumping into a mob and yelling at a bunch of people and
right. If we all hate the same thing.
Yeah.
Or if we all decide the earth is flat.
Yeah, exactly. Which is crazy, but it's, you know, the anti-vaxxer thing, the flat earther thing, like climate change deniers, like you're starting to see a lot of this stuff emerge online, and I think it's another way for people to find meaning for themselves.
It's just, yeah. And I want to make fun of people like that, but then I realize that they're just trying to find a place.
Yes.
They've never fit in anywhere else. Yep. And there's suddenly a group of people where they have standing, they have purpose.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they get to feel like they're one of the special few,
mm-hmm.
which
technically they are.
Yes. Yes. They definitely are special
cut
few.
All this out.
But like, you know, everybody likes to feel like they know something that the world doesn't.
Right.
And again, I think that the way the technology is today, it's conducive to that, to like giving people opportunities to like feel that way. Mm.
But okay, so then how do, like again, so what is our motivation to come back from that?
Well,
like,
I think if
everything that we're getting is instant and I can get laid 10 times this week with different people if I use an app and, you know, X, Y, and Z, like what? And everybody's just getting madder and madder and pulling off into like more specific tangential groups of the same. Like, yes. I watched this Flat Earth doc and there are like arguing factions of Flat Earth and like... Like people are breaking off into different subcategories of lunacy, and so it's just we're just dividing more and more and more, and it's just in my opinion getting crazier, and we want to get to this place where the fever, the fever breaks, and we get to a point where we're no longer mad, and it lessens and lessens, and then we can start to come back. But how do we, like, what is even, how do people even see that, let alone reach for it?
So. you know, not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to toot it here.
Please do.
You know, that's the reason I wrote this book, is because there's a game going on within our collective psychology, and I think we're not really aware. You know, all this technology is so new and it advances so quickly that we don't realize the effects it has on us as a culture. And I feel like everybody today has this kind of this ephemeral feeling that things are really fucked up, and it's like nothing's really working, you know, the way it should. Like, everybody's angry all the time, and everybody's stressed all the time, and everybody's anxious all the time, but they don't really, like, it's not really clear why everybody is. And so I think the first step is just making the population aware of these processes that go on, these factions, this factionalization of every movement and the outrage cycles and everything that happens. And then I think the second step is, and I think a lot of people are kind of reaching this point, is that you start to realize that at a certain point, more becomes less. I think the default setting for most of human history is that more is better. More food is better because people don't die. More, you know, education is better because people aren't stupid. And like, I think we've reached a place of so much abundance in certain areas that it's starting to backfire. Like, it's the quantity of opportunities for experience and information is outrunning our psychological ability to handle them. And so it's causing more problems.
Well, if I have a warehouse full of food, right? More food is better because I won't die of starvation, sure. Right? But some of that food starts to rot. And then eventually, you know, one bad apple, as they say, spoils the whole bunch. Is this a good analogy?
I'm fascinated to see where it goes.
Well, just like what you're saying is, like, eventually more becomes less, right? Like, if I have too much food that I can't eat it all and it starts to rot, that rot is going to spread. So, and then I have no food.
So that's an interesting way to put it. And I guess you could say that. I think one way to look at it is that in a society where we have so much information, we have a surplus of information, essentially, it's only the most extreme and emotionally charged information that spreads.
Right. And a lot of that is rotten information.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and then we can't trust any information.
Right. And so, yeah, it spoils the rest. So I think
it's a perfect analogy. Is what you're saying.
An amazing analogy. You nailed it.
Thank you. Okay.
No, but I mean, there is a lot of truth to that. Where I was kind of going with it initially was that, part of it's the paradox of choice thing with like Tinder that we talked about. But I think part of it too is that the way we feel a sense of control, like right now, I think we have kind of a misguided definition of what freedom is. Like, I think a lot of people conflate freedom with variety. Like, it's better to have 15 types of cereal than it is to have two, or it's better to have 15 potential dates than one potential date. That to us, that feels like more freedom because we have more stuff to choose from. But the problem is that at a certain point, if there's too much stuff, it actually makes us, the act of choosing actually causes more anxiety than it does satisfaction. And so one thing I talk about in the book is that I think it's important to kind of reorient our understanding of freedom as it's not about more stuff or more experience. It's about choosing our own limitations, choosing what experiences and what ideas and information we're going to allow into our life and what we're not, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But I guess my only question still is then, like, but why?
Why?
Yeah. If I don't even know that this is a problem, why would I limit You know what I mean? Like, why would I choose to do that? Though sometimes, I'm going to tell you, I'm an Android guy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I go, God damn it, I should just get an iPhone. Because
yeah.
I love all the choices
yeah.
that come with Android, but it's like ruining my life because everybody gets mad at me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I yeah. might as well succumb. Because everybody, anytime I text a new person that I don't know very well, they go, oh, you're a green text. It happens every time. It's so annoying. So I like, to me, that's what you're saying is like, I should just limit my choices and suck it up and make a sacrifice.
Well, it depends. It depends what your value is. So it's, I mean, if you value your relationships with those people and not being a green text more than you do like the app options or whatever, you know, that, like that's a value-based decision. I guess to answer your question, like why would people who are not aware of this ever choose to do this? It's because it's a losing game. It's the game of more, of always getting more. It has diminishing returns and ultimately it just burns you out. And I think, you know, it's funny because it's kind of a meme the last year. Like, I don't know if you've seen all these articles about millennial burnout.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't even know. I don't know. It feels like something that the press just like invented out of thin air. And
everybody's been burned out.
Yeah. It's basically it's all about just how overworked and exhausted and like overflow of information and everything.
Well, it's all these people who like take coding jobs and change cities and then like yeah. work 100 hours a week for 2 years and then take a different coding job in a different city and they live in micro apartments and
yeah. And it's you know, I think this ethos of, you know, more is always better, make more money, do more stuff, have more experiences, buy more shit, you know, that got us here, but it's run its course. And now we need to start self-limitation, like choosing what to cut out of our life rather than choosing what we want to bring into our life.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think people travel too much. I think people yep. eat too many weird foods and it's all just to put on Instagram, in yeah. my opinion.
Well, and it's, I mean, Instagram drives a lot of it, but a lot of it too, I think it's that chase for meaning.
Right.
It's that chase for, you know, it's something to hope for. You know, cause it's, and it comes back to that assumption of like, because it's easier to travel than ever before and eat a bunch of exotic stuff than ever before, people feel like they need to do it, you know, whereas there's nothing saying you need to do it. Like,
right.
In fact, what's actually more profound is deciding for yourself that you don't need to do it.
Oh man, I want to play this for so many ex-girlfriends. They're always like, you don't want to travel or do anything. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm comfortable.
It's funny because I've come around on the other side of that. Like I was that millennial.
You were a wanderluster?
Oh yeah. That millennial dude who was like, oh, I got to go to every country and I got to like do selfies in front of the Taj Mahal. You know, my wife and I hit a point 2 or 3 years ago. I think we were in Paris and just like the lines for everything was just so absurd. And like everywhere you went, there were people with selfie sticks like blocking your way. And she and I just looked at each other. We're like, why do we still do this?
We could do this at home.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's like, why are we, you know, it's like Paris is great. You know, definitely want to go back one day, but like we don't need to travel like every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like at this point, like literally everything can come to me.
Yeah.
There's very few things where I have to actually go out and do it anymore, where I can't just yeah. order something and have it delivered. This is Los Angeles.
Which again is, you know, part of that problem of connection.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, I'm not perfect.
Well, you fooled the listeners.
They do often write in telling me how perfect I am.
Wow, Daniel, no, you're don't. So perfect.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I'm like, guys, get over it.
That was Mark Manson talking about modern life. I am Naz.
I am Dan. Our co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. Do us a fave. If you like the show, even if you don't, probably share it.
Share it, yeah, share it, and we will speak to you next week.
Tell people how bad it is.
We'll speak to you next week.
Bye.